Hey everybody, this is officially, I think, a first video podcast for me. This is like, I feel very like virginy around this first time trying this. But this is Dan, guys. This is obviously my one of my favorite guests to come on here, Dan McClintock, co-developer. Hey Dan.
Hi.
Dan and I inspire each other a lot with different things. If you could get inside our text, it'd be interesting. Someday, if that text is ever shown, because we developed KI a lot of it through texting when we split apart after we first developed it. Well, so then we'll come back together and like he'll have an idea or I will, and it'll just spark something. Yesterday, Dan came to me, or maybe 2 days ago, and he said, conflation. And I was like, what's that mean? I really didn't know. But when he showed it to me and I went on into AI, it's like, that's exactly what we're working on. How did you learn that word, by the way? You're just good in school.
I think so. Yeah, I think, English language is my minor. So I think I just remember that I liked the word and I don't know if I knew exactly what it meant then, but it came back up into my consciousness recently because I kept seeing conflation happening in the spiritual paradigm. And so I looked up and I went, oh, that's that word that I loved. So, but yeah, you can, yeah.
I'm so glad you did, because as soon as he did that, that's what I mean by inspiring each other. I spent like probably 2 hours last night just diving deep into that subject through AI and kind of understanding the history. But hopefully you guys will hear what we're talking about here. Conflation is like bringing two ideas together kind of inaccurately or inappropriately. In a way, well, in spirituality, I think it's in a way that we harm ourselves. We bypass when we do this. And so we're going to talk about a few examples of this in our work or in spirituality. But Dan, tell us about, aren't there some simple examples that, and like, in case the audience doesn't know what this word means, that has nothing to do with our work?
Yeah, so conflation, when we looked it up, was the merging of two distinct ideas or confusing one idea or one concept for another. And so, like, an example that a lot of people, of conflation that a lot of people hold is conflating money with happiness, right? So, if somebody said, like, I make a lot of money, then I'll be happy. Like, these two things are equal when they're really two sort of, distinct things. Another one was conflating opinion with fact. So, I go see a movie and I say, oh, that movie sucked. That was terrible, right? And it's just simply, that's a bad movie. It's awful. But the person next to me, liked it or whatever. So more conflating, yeah.
Right, so that's a situation where somebody's conflating the objective view of something with their own personal experience, it sounds like. Okay, so now we get to the juicy stuff, because what inspired me was what I did is I went to AI and I said, AI, give me some examples of conflation in spirituality. Great thing about AI is it can think quickly. It gave us a long list. So what I've done is I've published that on the Medium. I have a blog there. And the reason I'm saying that is I really think this is a really important topic. And it was nice. So it's nice to have this list out there on the Medium so Dan and I can point to it or share it with people. So if you really want the whole list, go there. But we're going to pick out a few things here to talk about. Dan picked out a few of his favorite conflations, and then I did too. So Dan, give me one of your favorites. Let's talk about it.
Okay. All right. So one of them, the first one that the one that made me start to look up the word conflation was the embracing humanness thing that happens like in the spiritual paradigm. And I mean, I actually heard it a lot in the non-dual paradigm when I started to get into that world a little bit with you, was there was a whole emphasis on like embodiment and people, just certain teachers or certain, non-dual folks were saying, you got to embrace the your fullness and embrace your humanness, and I thought, well, yeah, that sounds great. I was like, that sounds like, yeah, that sounds like a compassionate thing to do for oneself, just embrace all parts of yourself. To me, it started to, it smelled a little bit, you know what I mean? Where I was just like, okay, first of all, what do you mean by embrace your humanness? Like really like go into it. Like, what is this about, And the more that I heard people talk about it, and they use things like, okay, you got to embrace your humanness by allowing things to get messy, or it's okay not to be okay, or what's another one? Like,
Well, another one is like allow all your imperfections. You hear that? It's like everything is perfect, but you have these imperfections. Allow all those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Allow your imperfections, allow yourself to just be how you are and all this stuff. And I thought, okay. The first thing that I remember thinking when I was in that mode was, but I'm already doing that. I'm already allowing my imperfections and,
Right? Can you help it? Right.
so and there's a lot of suffering in it. And so then people would say like, well, just embrace that. Embrace the negative emotions that come up and just welcome that and allow that. And I was like, yeah, but I kind of am already. Like, what is the, So I think eventually it just started to dawn on me that it was like, and you and I started to realize this when we were developing the work, was that there's a mechanism in most people, which now we know is emotional repression, that does argue for suffering and defends suffering. It defends our emotional repression. And so I went, I think that's what they mean. I don't know if they know that they mean that, but when they say embrace your humanness, what they're really saying is allow yourself to suffer and allow yourself to continue to suffer, if you need to suffer.
Yeah. But and so, yeah, how I took from that when I heard the same thing is it's like anything. I think I noticed it when non-duality started to become slightly more trauma informed. And like you said, there were some teachers and things that would say, embrace your humanness. And not knowing that I had buried anger, I think that's what confused it now that I think about it. Because that to me, I don't know what you think about that, but like as we know now, the repressed emotions are below the water. So if I'm listening to something like that, I've got repression. So there's the thing. That's it. So if I have repression, I can't hear that the way that maybe they intended. Because I'm going to hear, well, I might think I hear embrace my full experience, but my body says that's not safe. We're not going to be transforming in this the area or that area, whatever you think is going to happen here. Do you know what I mean by that part?
Yeah, I do. I do. I just the way that you said whatever your body's going, what you think is going to happen, Dan, that's, you know what I mean? It's like not into that,
No.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think so. I think I hear it from the place of repression, so I interpret it. And I think, I was raised in the church too, like in religion, and so there's a lot of, I don't know how to say this, but there's a lot of like you have to perform. You have to pretend like you're good or caring or compassionate, or not pretend, but you have to by force of will, you have to like do that, So that's what I started to realize. Okay. For me, embracing my humanness, when I started to get into the emotional repression work, I realized it was embracing the stuff that was under the water. It was starting to really embrace the stuff that was happening below the level of consciousness,
Right. So let me pick up on that. What are you saying is that, well, the way I heard that is embrace your humanness is good if you go to that level, because that's what I think too. That's where I'm producing all that stuff. But I think that's what I mean. I heard it from the unconsciousness, like you say. And I think that that's why you and I resonate with this. There's one particular teacher that I won't name, but you know who I'm talking about. And it's almost like it doesn't matter what people bring up. It's like just allow that. Right? You know what I'm talking about? And a lot of people teach that way. You and I were talking about that, and we didn't have the words for it, but there's conflation in that because it's like sometimes when you just tell people to allow everything, there's no granular sense of like, why is that happening? Why do I keep allowing stuff? I think a lot of people with trauma heard teachers like that, and even how I was before, and they, even though the teaching meant well, it just wasn't skillful enough because otherwise people are just, they keep producing unconsciously all this suffering, and then the practices just say allow that, allow that, okay, that's gonna allow that, and it's endless.
Yep, it never ends. It never ends. And that's what the, ending suffering is sort of the name of the game in KI. Like that's the idea, is to get to the stuff under the level of consciousness that's creating the suffering and making that conscious. And that's how you end suffering, is you just like pull it up and bring it into light. And so if someone's not doing that, if someone's not going below the level of consciousness and digging in and doing the repression work, then to allow, you're not really allow, you're just telling yourself that you're allowing things. You know what I mean? You're just saying, oh yeah, I'm allowing,
Yes, 100%.
and so I think So maybe we can say Eckhart's name because he's the one that kind of put us onto this. But
Yeah.
there's a passage in his book where he said, at some point you've got to go to, you've got to realize that there's something in you that's creating suffering. You know what I mean? And you have to like work with that. You can't just endlessly,
Yes.
allow everything to be as it is because, you're not.
Yeah. Right, because you're not. I've read that passage too by Eckhart, and I always felt like that was like a break from his teaching because you don't hear him say that very much unless you found it. But I thought it was a really important moment. But then, of course, he doesn't explain to the person how. And so
How?
that's another conflation because if he says, well, you have to end your suffering, how somebody, if they have repression, they're going to interpret that a certain way. Right? They're going to
Yep.
probably not get to the repression by that pointer that everything is supposed to end or you have to be interested in it ending.
Right,
That's
they'll grab
yeah.
hold of that.
Small point there. Okay, so but keep on this topic of I don't even want to get off of the embracing your humanness. There's a few things on that left. Do you have anything else on that before we leave that?
Well, it sort of segues into the self-love thing. I mean, that's the next thing that I picked was self-love, but I want to let you share sort of
I
what
think
your
that's
next
it
thing
for
was.
me. The only thing is I have is around, again, I just want to remind people that there's a trend I think that's happening that when trauma came into spirituality, it's like we couldn't just allow everything. I think there was a knowing that, but we didn't, there weren't any teachings or practices in spirituality that were really skillful. So I heard a lot of teachers say things like embrace your humanness. And I think that if you look at spirituality, that came at about the same time when we started realizing there's trauma here. But we didn't have the tools. Certain teachers didn't. And so, they were doing the best they could because it's true. Embrace your humanness. But how do you do that?
Yeah. Well, and it's what we want to hear too, I think. I mean, it's what people who are traumatized want to hear is it's like let yourself, love yourself or embrace your humanness or have self-compassion or whatever. It's like, and I think, I mean, honestly, it is a good pointer. It's like, yeah, embrace it, that those parts and do that. But it's like if you're doing that at the exclusion of resolving the emotional oppression, that's where it gets tricky,
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead with your the next one if you want, because it's related to it, you
Yeah,
said.
self-love. Okay, so here's a good one. So I don't know, maybe you and I were doing some work on this, but I started to realize that trying to, like I was saying earlier, trying to will myself to love myself or trying to practice or cultivate self-love.
Yeah. Just open up a can of worms. I saw the worms go everywhere.
I know. And at one point it was like I realized, okay, how much can I practice this when down here in the body it I'm it's there's a mechanism that's compulsively hating myself, that's con I'm conditioned to hate myself, right? And
Right.
so down there it's going hate yourself, and then up here above the level of consciousness I'm going, yeah, but love yourself,
It's not that much different than Stuart Smalley, if you know what I mean. You remember Stuart Smalley? It's not that much different, really, because Stuart wouldn't be standing in front of the mirror saying he's good enough unless he felt like he hated himself. That's what you're saying, like deep down. That's what I was going to say. Why don't we start with the fact that we hate ourselves and it's unconscious? For anger repressors, that's a good place to start rather than trying to believe you love yourself. But go ahead.
No, that's it. That's it. I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people love me. It's like, yeah, because his body's going, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, and everybody
Right.
hates you. And so
That's
he's trying to affirm the opposite. But yeah, when we were doing that work, I started to realize just exactly what you said, which was to love myself, I had to make the self-hate conscious. You know what I mean? To love myself, I have to hate myself consciously, which is the weirdest sounding thing ever. But that was
Yeah.
that was the link. So.
Totally. That may be the missing link, is just so that we can give people some solution instead of just problems, is that if you process repression, these things start making sense more. But when you have repression, they almost all like guide us into bypassing when you just hear it from here for many people. All right, what else do you have on that? On,
Yeah, on self-love. Well, just
yeah.
that I think I think it can get weaponized. I think self-love can, people can start to weaponize it against themselves, where it's like, I have to. I mean, I probably did this too, where it's like, I have to be kind to myself. I have to be kind and compassionate to other people. I have to. It's like I'm trying to force myself to be something that I'm not, and that's the problem to begin with, you know. So why not just go right to that? This forcing myself to be different, hating myself, and make that conscious, you know.
Sure. I mean, look at where's the motivation for us to believe in the conflation? We have to talk about that. Like, why would human beings be so interested in telling themselves that they love themselves unless they didn't?
Yes.
Right? Because when you love yourself, you don't say that to yourself. You don't have to, you know,
Yeah.
because it just feels natural. But so it's just a good thing to just watch is when somebody's affirming like that. It's almost like they're telling you, I don't actually believe this. I actually
Yeah.
hate myself. Yeah.
It's that Shakespeare, that methinks thou doth protest too much thing, you
Exactly.
know.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot more to say on, so I don't know if it's a lot, but self-love is such a big one. Do you have anything else on that before I share some things?
No, go ahead, yeah.
I for me it was personal because I had my unlovable story was core for me. And so I actually had this experience in my own before I got to anger repression where I really thought that I was experiencing that self-love, but I was bamboozling myself around it. And how I thought that was that when I was processing the sense of unlovability that was at the surface, but not getting to the buried anger, I would feel peace at the surface, which was actually a trauma response, keeping me safe in the buried anger. And I mistook the peace for like self-love. I mistook presence without being embodied as somehow I could have self-love. And that was me staying safe, like a lot of people do, I think, in non-duality, where you question identity and you feel open. But you haven't gotten to the root, the real reason why the unlovability was coming up. So I have some direct experience with the self-love, self-deception.
Yeah. That makes me think of the, because I'm coming from like the recovery sort of paradigm, and you're coming from the non-dual paradigm more so. But the parallel for me was with self-love, was like what I learned in traditional recovery was that self-love was to not use, or to not act out, or to not drink, or whatever. You know, it's like, that's taking care of me. That's the, and I'm like, okay. So I hear that from them, and yet weirdly, the using, the drinking, the acting out were the first form of self-love that I learned, because they were the way that I learned to soothe myself and take care of myself and regulate my nervous system. And so it's a double message, because I'm going, well, loving myself is that. And then these other people are saying, well, no, loving yourself is the opposite of that. It's the, you know, and so just talk about can of worms, you know?
Crazy. Yeah, that's crazy. Plus, we have the conditioning as anger repressors where we have to be good. And so that's there all the time. And it's just infusing all of our choices. So we'll say that we love ourselves or believe that just to get love and stay safe. That's the other thing I was going to say about self-love. I want to give people solutions too. Here's the solution. Process your buried emotions. Because there is self-love as possible. That's the whole thing about these things. But if you have repression, again, you can't hear it. You can't feel self-love. I mean, I'm just say it that way. How could you? Because you're driven by the fear of some buried emotion. But if you process that, it's true that you actually feel love within, like it's all here on your side. So there's a good news behind it too. It's not just a bunch of conflation. If you do your
Yeah.
work, right?
Yeah, there's a real form of it that's, yeah, totally. Yeah, and the trick is in not conflating it and going, okay. So it, for me, like when I started to come into to the emotional repression work, and I was looking around the addictive stuff, it was like, I've got to allow myself to the original form of self-love for me, which was to act out, or to, you know, use, or whatever, you know. And that sounds so weird. That sounds so backwards to people in traditional recovery to be like,
I
you
know.
know.
Can you explain it more? I don't want you to lose your point, but I think people would like to hear you say, I know what you mean by that. Because,
Yeah.
say more.
Yeah. Well, and so mine was, you know, like pornography was the addiction that I had. So it was like acting out with porn or binging on it, or whatever. That was the way that I soothed myself. That was the way that I regulated my system, which was dysregulated by the buried and repressed anger I didn't know about.
That's crazy.
Right?
So true,
So that was this, the
though,
self-love was to act out and to look at porn and to jerk off or whatever it was and to make myself feel better temporarily. That was the self-love. And then, I got into recovery. I sort of was pushed into recovery in my 20s and stuff. And then I learned, no, it's the opposite. Self-love is to not do that, is to not regulate the dysregulated system, And so that was, yeah, man. I look at it now and I go, that was such an issue because I didn't know what was going on. Like, I did not know what was happening. I was so confused,
That's crazy. Because I've went through that with you, part of it at the end. And I know your conditioning. I was just thinking about how we were both conditioned into being good, and then we had these addictions. And so if you have to be good, God, you're going to mishear everything. Because it's like we have trying to stop that addiction is often coming from having to be good. So the self-love gets really skewed along the way. And I was just thinking about that when we were living together, how when you came, you didn't have that self-love. I remember that because you had been conditioned by all these people to, like you say, to in your own life, just like me, in your own life, be a certain false way and then go to the porn and finally experience your desires or the things that you want, but you couldn't have any of those things, right, with people. You felt like you couldn't.
Yep, couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. And for you, I mean, I had to have this space with you where you said, "Go do it," and you then there was no judgment around it, So it started out with, I think that was necessary because, and it's funny because it was necessary because we hadn't developed the repression work yet, which is work that allows you to get to true self-love, right? So it allows you to get there quicker. But I had to have you as like the person to go. Do what you want to do, and there's no consequence, like there's no punishment. I'm not upset with you, and that was like a new world for me. So yeah, big
Yeah,
talk.
though you did the same thing for me because I was sharing that in a video. I'll share it here is I had a lot of nerve pain and I had this conditioning, speaking of conflation, that confused sobriety with recovery. So I had this conditioning deep in my body with my dad that was like, well, now that you've quit using those things, you can't use those things. If you use that thing, you'll be addicted. Plus, it was much bigger than that. It's like if you use that, you lose the love and approval. This is unconscious that I would have gained. So you would sit there with me when I was in pain and you would say, but why are you suffering? I was like, what do you mean? I really didn't get it because I'd been conditioned to think that sobriety is recovery. So I was willing to like go down with the ship, as you know, in a lot of pain, just refusing to medicate. And then once I medicated, that helped me get into my body and heal it. So that conflation has real damage in people's lives in some cases.
Seriously, I remember you in that pain too, and that was brutal. I remember I fussed at you about it a couple of times too. I was like, just
Yeah.
take the painkillers. You have them. Just take them, you know?
Ridiculous self-righteousness is what it is. You can't help it, but that's what it was.
Okay. So yeah, so that was self-love. So it kind of leads us right into talking about compassion. I know this is the one that you picked out. So yeah, tell us
Yeah.
about that.
Again, direct experience here. When I had repression, when I had anger repression, compassion was a way to stay safe and get love. I know that now. Because it got mixed in. I didn't have the word for it until Dan and I just talked off. I was like, what's the word that compassion gets conflated with? He said, we looked it up, people pleasing is the word. Because when you're sitting there with somebody and you're afraid to be yourself, being quiet or compassionate is very self-protective. I didn't understand that. I thought, and even people pleasing is. So it can really look like the same thing on the surface, totally. The only way you know is by doing the inner work, is what I've learned. Because you can fool anyone and yourself between compassion and people pleasing. And I did for many years. I was getting love. I wasn't being compassionate, actually. You actually have to be in someone else. You have to actually see them to be compassionate. When you have repression, you only protect yourself at some level.
Yep. Oh God, it does look almost exactly the same. I think the only way that I can differentiate it now. I couldn't differentiate it when I was deep in repression. I honestly, it was hard to tell the difference, but now I can because I think I've come enough out of repression to where I can sense the energy of it when somebody's coming from actual compassion versus when they're coming from like the codependent compassion, you know, where it's they're trying to get needs met. And yeah, it's crazy, man. Yeah.
So much of this is energetic. I wanted to say that because you and I both grew up as like empathic people, like so many people out there. What people don't realize though is that comes in handy here because, right? Because we're spending so much time like with our in our own self-protective state when we have repression. But when that gets opened up, that empathy and ability to read people's energy starts to align for us so we can have boundaries and say no and not trauma bond. That's what I've learned.
That's it. And the boundaries are yeah, the compa for me, the being compassionate or kind or whatever it was like it like any way that I can justify not having boundaries.
Exactly.
You know,
Right.
or not setting boundaries.
Yeah, justify getting my needs met, but I don't know I'm doing it. So I guess that's it for compassion, but that's kind of related. All my stuff, all my examples are spiritual examples because of just being a teacher. So one thing I was going to talk about is how beingness, this is another can of worms. I just saw the worms go everywhere. Beingness and passivity. Because there's so much passivity in the non-dual teachings. We actually kind of teach passivity in a way. Passivity meaning don't get to the buried stuff and then just let everything else be. And that's a very passive thing because we're creating it. We're creating all the suffering and then we're passively witnessing what we're creating. See that? So it's so easy to get trapped in. And when we're training people, and I know you know I've had this experience and you probably have too, is the teachers are hardest nuts to crack. Because once you get that experience of being and you have repression, you can just hang out there and be very passive about all the stuff that's coming and going and tell people whatever you want to tell them about your state of realization because you're not even checking into the unconscious to see if you have repression. You're just passively sitting there. One thing I've said to people is, but how long will you passively witness your suffering until you get to the root of it? Even if you're resting in being, how long will it take? Because it's not really embodied being. If you knew that, you wouldn't just sit there and claim it. If you knew that it wasn't embodied, but if we don't go into the body where the repression is, we'll just sit there and fool ourselves. So as you know, I've gotten to these places where a teacher or a coach is in the training program and they're like, I'm good. I'm like, okay, you're good. What's that mean? What that means is they're about ready to go get their needs met again, and they've done just enough repression so they didn't get to the unmet needs fully. And then they're going to try to bamboozle me into it's not about needs. And it is, because it's just a matter of going down into your body and seeing that you're using the beingness in this way. So I had to include that.
The few people I've worked with that are like teachers, there's been a couple people that are teachers, but definitely seekers, you know, non-dual seekers and stuff. It's like the challenge, it's the spiritual language. Do you know what I mean? It's like a lot of times if they use that, like, I don't know, there's so many different terms or whatever, but if they do use a lot of the flowery language or whatever, I'm kind of like going, I just it's still it feels like methinks thou dost protest too much. It's like why say that? Do you know what I mean? Like what, like let's really check, like why are you talking about, you know, beingness or kundalini or, you know, like what's the you
That's
know?
a good point because there's a comes a point like in spirituality where it's like don't deconstruct this. Everything else is okay, but don't deconstruct this. Certain things are they're not deconstructible or something. But beingness is definitely deconstructible because if you have repression, you're not done. And so that's what I think it is. It's like a landing. It's just a landing is all it is. And then after that point, we're no longer open.
Maybe I'm extra sensitive to it because I come out of religion, you know what I mean? Where it's like when you hear people say religious stuff and I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Then I can transfer that to spiritual. It's a little harder with spiritual folks because spiritual stuff, frankly, to me sounds true. A lot of it's truer, or it sounds truer than the religious stuff. But still, it's like if it's a lot of that, I don't know, that spiritual language, I just have my, like, I know that I had to like totally lose God to find God in religion, basically. And I had to like deconstruct the whole God, and religious stuff. And so then I apply that those same tools to the spiritual stuff, and it seems to work well,
Yeah, that's an interesting topic because you didn't come through the non-dual thing. And I was more critical of the non-dual thing because I came through it. But I think you're starting to see a lot more or pay more attention to it now or something. Because I've heard you say recently, catch on to some things that spiritual teachers say much more, even though that's not your foray. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff. You said language. The way I see it is it's almost like a systemic thing. It's like through centuries we have crafted a very self-protective language, like almost collectively. There are very few exceptions to it. There are some teachers, of course, or things that go deep into the body. But to me, it's like it's a collective thing. It's like we've all agreed that we're not going to go beyond a certain point. And it just gets, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I know. I remember Ken Wilber did an interview with Rick Archer in the last couple of years or something. And he was talking about, he was saying repression. He's like, no one's doing, you can't find it. Like, no one's doing emotional repression work, or very few people are doing that type of thing. And it's like, I remember Rick being like, what do you mean nobody's doing that in spirituality and non-duality? And it's, he was like, yeah, you can't, you really can't. And we've looked. You mean like I really have looked, and there's some people that kind of get close to it and approach it, but
Yeah, that's another conflation, though, right there is if I say I'm doing somatic work, it can pass as I'm getting to the root, but you're not. And it's so easy to bamboozle yourself on that issue. This is why I stopped using the word somatic work for the most part, because it's become too vague and conflatable.
totally, because people like. I mean, we'll do posts and we'll talk about emotional repression work. And I had a guy say, like, well, that's what my somatic therapist does with me. And I'm like, yeah, but they don't do emotion. Trust me, they don't do emotional repression. They're not
Right.
really getting to the root of it and doing that because,
Right.
anyways,
Right. Because I think you and I are the kind of people that if somebody was doing that, we would acknowledge it. We're not against any of that. We actually we would like to find partners and things out there. But we also want to be critical if it's not there, because that's part of the conflating is just like, yeah, it's just brushing over all of this.
Same, like, same difference, same thing. If you're doing
It's
this,
not.
it's like, no, it's
Yeah.
really not, and people, I think it's funny because people will hear that as like, well, you guys, think, oh, we can pull this into the arrogant thing. You guys are arrogant, or you think you have the one right way. It's like, no, we don't have that. We're not saying that. We're saying we have emotional repression work, and it's really effective and direct and powerful, and other people aren't doing that. Do you know what I mean? Like there may be other people that are approaching it, but we have
Yeah.
not. You really found, so.
There's a conflation in there too. It's everywhere because people will hear something within their own framework and they can't hear it beyond that. I don't know if that's a conflation, but you know what I mean by that. It's like if I've practiced a certain number of years with this teacher or this practice, then I have a certain paradigm and I don't recognize it as a paradigm, probably, but I do. And then if I hear you and I got to try to fit it in that box, if I can't fit it, that's terror. If I can't fit it in my box, see?
That's it.
Right. And so therefore I'm going to reduce you to you're just another worldview that I can disagree with and move on.
And meanwhile, and I always say to people that when they do that, I'll say, write it off at your own risk. You know what I mean? Like,
Exactly.
go for
I yeah,
it.
totally. I mean that's what I have to do my work. That's the codependency. It's like if somebody wants to suffer that's been my work. Suffer. Because because I was always trying to fix and change. I mean, that's just it. If somebody doesn't want to, I always say to people, if you can find another way out there, go to that. Because it's not really, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the root of suffering. The letters KI, that's just the way we do it here. See, there's a systemic avoidance of buried emotions, and KI gets scapegoated sometimes, I think, on that issue. That we're just really resistant to this. Yeah.
Yeah, we it definitely the scapegoating does happen, and it's what's funny is as you say that, where it's like go suffer, like we really mean, like we don't mean that punitively. It's like, no, just go do that. And ironically, talking about compassion, that's compassion, is to just be like, hey, go do that, because whatever you ex encounter and experience out there, just like telling like someone who's not done drinking in AA to go drink, it's like, just go do that, because that's going to take you to it quicker than anything else,
Totally. I actually think that's very loving. And when I was a teacher, when I was actually teaching people to avoid buried emotions, and I was saying that's compassion or loving, I don't feel like it is now. it's unconscious and it's limiting. I didn't know any better, but I don't see that as loving, especially to draw people in, keep them safe, keep them unconscious to their buried emotions, and keep them coming back. So that's how I see that. I definitely feel like that's not for me. That's why I just realized recently why I don't point to presence as that reason. Because I don't actually feel it to be compassionate until we get to the root, because it just leaves people in such a place. Okay, you brought something up, and I want to go to that.
Yeah, so this is a big one, and this is one that I've been talking about recently in some of the videos I've been doing, is just the term healing, right? So healing gets conflated with the identity, right, of someone who's either unhealed or healed, right? So it's basically healing gets conflated with ego.
Yes. That's, by the way, the seeking and the finding that Toshi and I talk about in the book. See what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I'm either seeking healing or I found it.
Yes, totally. Yeah, it's like they're both landings. And so, and healing too, it makes it sound like it's like you're wounded or you're damaged if you're unhealed, and that you're fixed or something if you are healed, or whatever it is. And so to me, it just never, the lang even the language of it, as I step back from it doesn't make sense, because it's like, well, we're not, I'm not, if I'm in emotional repression, I'm not wounded. I've been holding my breath for 35 years. I'm not wounded. Do you know what I mean? It's like
Right.
I just have been like pushing something down into the body. So,
So the identity piece, is that where you're going? Because then we get an identity out of that.
yeah, we get an identity out of that, and then the identity gets us love or gets us safety or whatever it is, and then
Sure.
it keeps us in suffering. So, so that's why I don't even like to call it healing. Awakening is another term that I don't like either. Healing, but healing is like, I don't know. It feels too clinical. Feels too, like there's something that we have to fix or heal, when really it's just like, no, there's just stuff that we have to make conscious. We just really have to get down there and make a bunch of things, a bunch of lies that we're telling ourselves, compulsively conscious. So.
That's good. Because I was thinking, Toshi and I were talking about this, is if you do emotional repression work, you see that the identity of I'm not healed and the identity of I'm healed, they can come from the same repression. So you have to trust your body. What I think that's the issue there for me is, can we talk about our experience without it being a landing? That's one way to do it. Because even then, saying that I'm free of this or coming out with books about enlightenment was very disconnecting, actually, because I wasn't fully embodied. So I was using that to get love and approval, which is always disconnecting. So now when I share my experience, I want to be honest. There are definitely things that I've had to look at, as you know, along the way, so I don't come to this place. And it's disconnecting to say that, to I'm healed. But to me, it's like, trust your body, because somebody could say that they're healed and it's honest and it feels honest. But what got me on this subject was watching somebody, a healer, who had been doing some deep work. And then he said, well, I'm a wounded healer. And the look on his face was like, oh, I turned it off, because it felt like, well, I know him. And I felt like, are you really going to look at that? First of all, are you going to use that? I think I even said something to him about it. But I think that people feel like they're really progressive when they do that. But if you don't process at the level of repression, it's not really progressive to say that you're a wounded healer. It's another identity that keeps you safe, or it could be if you check your body.
Yep. And it could also be, it reminds me of in the 12-step rooms, there's like the false humility of people be like, well, I'll never, like I'm never really done, and I'm never really. And again, that's the side of it where it's like, that's another me thinks thou doth protest too much, where it's like, well, why do you need to say that? Why do you need to say that you're not? And why do you need to say that you are? Do you mean like, what's going on there? Oh, maybe is it because you have repressed emotions in your body that you're trying to avoid? Okay, well, that makes sense.
God, that's so good, because that whole thing, like, I'm always on, we've talked about this before. We're always be this way. We're just in this, that kind of humble, false humility thing. Like, don't expect us to any really great things. We're in the path. We're always in the process. Like, you can land anywhere. That's the bottom line, isn't it? It's like, You don't know whether any of this stuff is a landing until you check your body. And you always know if it's a landing if you check your body.
Yeah, you'll know immediately if you test it. You know what I mean? Because yeah, it's like when people say like, "I'm gonna be doing this for the rest of my life. I'm gonna be healing and on this path." And I'm like, "Well, first of all, A, how could you know that? And B, what's the point of saying that? Like, why are you? What's that for? You know? Like, how does
Right.
that serve?"
Yeah. And you have to be careful with that answer because if you ask somebody that in training, like, what's the point of that viewpoint? They'll come up with another bamboozling viewpoint until they go into their body because it's so simple when you go in your body. It's like, nope, I need love. I need safety. It keeps you honest, doesn't it? Like, to just process it that
Yeah,
you almost have to. Yeah.
it's good. I have to keep looking too at mine because I usually say, like, when I talk about the work on in my own experience, that I'm coming out of repression, you know? And so I have to like watch that, where I've fallen prey to both of like, well, I'm not out of repression, and also like, well, I am out of repression. It's like, no,
Right.
I don't want to go to either extreme, because I don't, you know. But if I check the body, it's like, well, I just, if I have buried anger and the fear of it in the body, then I am coming out of repression, and I'm working with it, then I am coming out of repression, you know? So.
This reminds me to go tell people or ask them to listen to our podcast, which not a lot of people listen to, the Big Ideas, because it's kind of related to that a little bit. Because it's a big idea to think I'm always going to be in the healing process. That's a big idea. So is the idea that I'm healed. It's a big one. What do you get out of that? That's the whole question, you know? Like if you think, right? The big ideas. Anything else on healing? So we could probably do a podcast on each one of these topics.
I know, seriously. On healing, I think that's it for me. Yeah, but yeah, I think you had one more, right? What was your last
Yeah.
one?
Oh, if I remember it. Oh, I want to talk about two things. One is, which I talk about all the time, in the healing community, there's a lot of focus on the overt narcissism archetype. So if you're big or angry or whatever, maybe you're really like maybe you just want to hurt people. The point is that gets confused with hurt and sadness repression a lot. And you know, I always say they're targeted unfairly. And I think it's because of the healers who a lot of it is they don't do their own processing of buried anger. So they have shadows towards big energy. Well, that's just natural because we all have suffering, but you're a healer. And now you're splitting the universe and you're dividing in several ways that you're not you're you've got such a wide net there that has to do with your repression, not them, that you've included not only the diabolical narcissist who's out to get people and says it, you compare that with a hurt and sadness repressor who didn't feel safe sharing that when they were growing up, and that's just way too wide of a net for me.
Oh man, the narcissist stuff is just, it just feels like such weaponry. Do you know what I mean? Like all of the different terms, and you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like again, if you go into your own body, you find it. We all have it. That's another conflating. I'll never stop this podcast because it just brings up one thing after another. Like this is a really important topic, conflation.
Yeah, and so how about, you talked about conflating, talk about freedom. That's another thing that you mentioned, freedom. What was the conflation there? Yeah.
This reminds me of the teacher that we were talking about. That if we tell people to just sit and be present, that somehow that's freedom. And it sometimes gets talked about like that's all you have to do is just be and allow. But that's actually again, a state where we're creating our suffering unconsciously and we're allowing the suffering that we're creating. And we're calling it freedom because we probably don't want to feel the buried emotions that create it. And that's how I see it. So this is probably the most important one to me because I feel like that's been used a lot. We've watered down the whole awakening thing to just be here now. And somehow, if we're just here now, that's freedom. But freedom actually feels very different than that,
Yeah.
than sitting and allowing your suffering and awareness.
Or allowing yourself to continue to create your suffering and awareness. To
Right, exactly.
if you were to talk about what freedom really does feel like? Like the freedom, emotional freedom, or coming out of the repression, like what is that? The
Thank
true,
you. For me, it's like if I can sit and talk to you and I can express everything that's true for me, and I don't walk away from the conversation still ruminating about that, then I'm going to be present everywhere I go in every conversation. But it has to do with repression work and not being here now. And that's how I've experienced it with presences. Why was I holding all onto all that stuff? Because when I'm talking to you, I can't be real with you. So I have to hold on to all that and ruminate, carry that to the next conversation or relationship, and carry it all over all the time. But repression inquiry just cleared me in relationship. It didn't mean it was always nice or clean, but it was honest. And by honest, I've experienced freedom. I feel like it has to do with finding safety and love within. That's the embodied presence. Because if I feel safe to feel and express everything, and I'm not terribly concerned whether if I'm real with you, you're going to leave, then I'm free.
I can honestly say, because you talked to me a bunch when I first started, coming to work with you, and we became friends, about awareness and presence and freedom and all that stuff. And I think I was holding it as concepts for a long time. I was like holding that as ideas and concepts and stuff. And then I started to do the emotional repression work, and I started to get taste of what you were talking about, or what Toshi was talking about. And I would be like, oh, okay. I think I'm not even, I can't even say understanding now, but it's more like I'm experiencing what you were trying to point me towards for so long,
So Dan, you brought something up that I want to indulge in a little bit, because I've been close friends with you for a long time and I've watched your path. And this thing about non-duality, I was always interested in, well, not only why is that my filter, but why is it not yours, since we're doing the same work? But what I love about our relationship is that I just officially just let you be. You have your own thing. And yet at the same time, through this process, without me teaching you anything, you found presence, or you've embodied that much more. Can you explain what that's like for people who will come here? And they, because this is another thing where people say, well, I don't have any background in presence, or I haven't done this, but I don't think it's necessary. And I want to hear from people like you who will say it's not, because when you get to repression, it can bring that presence about. What do you have to say about that?
Oh man, so this is such a rich, broad, this is so when I first started working with you, I came to you as like my teacher, right? So that was the first, I listened to you, and I came to Killaby Center, and you were working with me, and you were pointing me toward, you kept trying to point me towards awareness and presence, and
Sorry.
it's okay,
Sorry
it's
about
good. Ultimately it helped, but and I could, and I kept sort of like, it was like I was trying to experience it, but I just, since I couldn't because of the emotional repression, I sort of like turned it into conceptual landings. So I started to go, oh yeah, I'm present with this, or I'm aware, I'm in awareness, resting as awareness, whatever it was. And then, we met Toshi. Toshi talks about that too, because he sort of is more along those lines than the non-dual, and he had his awakening experience. So anyways, so what I think I said to you one time, and I was just like, I don't feel like I can do that, because I feel like my body has, it needs to suffer, it needs to pull me out of presence or awareness. It's like that's what
Yeah.
it's trying to do, like all the time, like the suffering compulsion is trying to do that.
You were right, by the way, about that point.
I was going to say, it turns out that I was right, and I should
Yeah.
have trusted myself, because it was. And then we found that mechanism, and we started to do the emotional repression work. And as we started to do that, then I started to feel like I started experiencing what that resting as awareness or presence or whatever, what that was. And what it really was the ability to be myself. It was the ability to feel and express what had been true, that I
Yeah.
couldn't feel and express for my entire life because of the repression, So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's really, it's nice to get a taste of it, and to start to live in that space more and more, the more that I do the repression work and express. Yeah, it's just good. And it doesn't feel like the, I'm on the mountaintop and my eyes are closed and all this stuff. It feels like, oh, I want to go to the grocery. I'm at the grocery store. This is awesome. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Just feel, or
Yes.
I'm, you know, taking a walk and I'm talking about this stuff, you know, to people and sharing it. But anyways, yeah, that's what I would, yeah.
That's beautiful because see the th what I've been exploring is how when we sit and talk about presence and all this stuff all the time, we program people to make that a really big deal, either as something that they're seeking or that they found, and that what you're, and that you and a lot of other people are going to come and bust the myths because that programming is what reifies the presence. It makes it hard for people to actually embody it. But you didn't have that programming, so you just did the work. And so when you say it's just natural and simple for you, that feels very organic. That's the way it should be. But we make it into something. That's what I'm saying. I think so. Anybody who thinks that they can't do this work because they don't have an awareness background, 86 on that, because I've seen it enough, but I didn't have words for it because it wasn't my experience. See, and I've been a little bit trepidatious about trying to share everyone's experience, and I don't have that experience, so hopefully people will take from that. Yeah.
I think what people, I think what you can ask yourself is, because this is what, if I were in fully in my repression for that, however many, you know, 35 plus years in the repression, if I could honestly ask myself an answer, can you be yourself? Can you be yourself in all situations? Can you just be you? I knew I could not. Do you know what I mean? Like even in the depths of it, I was like, I can't do it. You know, I can't do it. And I think that's the, maybe that's a more direct question is, can you just show up and be yourself and be you, you know?
Okay, so thank you all for hanging out with us. And I was just talking to Dan off camera because we're very inspired by this and there's more that we could say today. We're going to do a part two or some other parts on this. So, Dan, until then, if people, I think people know how to work with me because I'm putting my links everywhere, but you have your own website coming up and your own expression out there. Can you tell people how to work with you now?
Yep. So you can, I mean, you can find me on Instagram or TikTok, or I have a personal Facebook page. So any of the social media, the big ones. And then if you want to book a like a clarity call and talk about doing some of the work or the mentorship, or you know, do a session or intensive or something like that, my website is Get With Deprogram. So Get With Deprogram .com.
Thank you, Dan. Come back and talk to me.
Yeah, man. Thanks.